My talk is actually somehow closely recorded to David's talk, but maybe it's about some examples from David's talk, but there will be some maybe new feature because I want to also do something on the quantum level. And quantum here means in the sense of quantum geometric Langevin, but I'm going to start with some kind of relatively pedestrian thing. So let me begin by the following. So begin by recalling sort of usual geometric Satake equivalence. And then the reason I want to recall it is that I want to discuss why it is a bad statement. And discuss why it is bad. And then I want to replace it with something. So that's kind of maybe part one, then part two is replaced with something good. And that something good is known. I mean, it's not due to me and or to my collaborators. And then the main thing we would generalize part three. And so here are least super algebras will appear. And why does least super algebras that appear? This is something that I don't understand at all, but I think that maybe David can make some comments about it. And then, you know, if I have time, then discuss relation to David's talk. Okay, that's kind of the plan. So now let me do this. So I'm going to start with G, which is reductive algebraic groups, they connected. Everything will be over complex numbers. And then it has this Langevin's dual group. Now, one word of warning is that the notion of Langevin's dual will actually at some point they will need some kind of modified notion of Langevin's dual, but for now it's kind of usual Langevin's dual. And then, well, let's introduce standard notation, key variable the field of Laurent power series. Here's the ring of integers, and then we can see the affine Grassmannian of G, which is G of K mod G of O. And then we can see that the category of, well, kind of standard theorem maybe, is that if you can see that the category of G of O equivalent perverse sheaves on the affine Grassmannian, which you can think of, and for the purposes of this talk, it might be useful to think about it as in a D-module setting, D-modules on the affine Grassmannian G of O equivalent. This is naturally a tensor category, which is equivalent to representations of G-check. So that's a very nice statement in principle. So that in some sense, that's the starting point of geometric Langevin and so on. But let me discuss why this is a bad statement. So let me discuss the drawbacks of this. The drawbacks are as follows. So one drawback is easy to explain, is that this theorem does not hold, well, it doesn't hold as stated. On the derived level. So this is actually a derived geometric Satake, which in the left-hand side puts the GFO equivalent derived category of the Grassmannian, but then I have to put something more complicated on the right-hand side. It's not just going to be the derived category of representations of G-check. So representation of G-check is a semi-simple category, so its derived category is pretty boring. And so another way to say this is that if you look at the if you look at the corresponding derived category of geophilic baryon sheaves and affine Grassmannian, it's not equal to the derived category of its, I mean, it has the natural T structures whose heart has the Sabellian category of perverse sheaves, and but the derived category is not equal to the full equivariant derived category is not equal to the derived category of the heart. So that's kind of one thing that I'm going to view as a drawback. For some people, it might actually be an advantage, but for the purposes of this talk, this will be a drawback. And the second drawback is that it doesn't extend to quantum level. And so let me discuss what quantum level means. Well, why might we want a quantum level? Well, if we look at the right-hand side, then we have here the tensor category of representations of G-check, and that has a natural deformation. So rep G-check has a natural deformation, which I'm just going to denote by rep UG check. So this is the category of representations of the corresponding quantum group. Now, one thing I want to emphasize that I'm going to write this Q as if it is a number, but in fact, to think about it as a number, you need to fix some invariant form on the Lie algebra. So in fact, what Q actually is canonically, it's some invariant, say wild group invariant form on the core character letters of G with values in C star. That's how you should think about it. So somehow I'm not going to discuss the details, but in principle, somehow it will be sort of important very soon that in order to sort of define quantum groups, you need to fix a form on the Lie algebra. And so you want to somehow now you want to produce some similar geometric realization of the category of representation of the quantum group, and so one thing that you naively might try is the following that let me actually write that here a form 1G just for the algebra of G is fixed here. And when I say form, I need it to be actually, integral, I mean, invariant, and integral and even. That's a good condition to require. And then such a form, let's denote like this. This form defines some line bundle, let me call it L. Determinant line bundle, on the Affine Grassmannian. And you might try to sort of study, so you can try to study, that's kind of a natural thing to try to do, the category of, perverse sheaves or geophilic covariant. Let me write it like this. So I want to take L, I want to take total space of L, I want to remove the zero section, and I want to put Q here. So Q means that I want to consider sheaves which are on the fibers, which are now just C stars. I want them to have monodromic Q. So you might try to ask whether you have such an equivalence. And what happens is that you absolutely don't have such an equivalence. In fact, what happens is that left-hand side is trivial, is actually just the category of vector spaces if Q is generic. So if Q is sufficiently generic, then you won't have any such sheaves at all. For the future purposes, one remark which will be important later for completely different reasons is that if Q is a root of unity, then the left-hand side is not real, but it has nothing to do with the quantum group, then the left-hand side is equivalent to representations of some group H, where H is some reductive group of the same rank as G. So rank of H is equal to rank of G. But sometimes it can be G, it can be G dual, it can be something intermediate. So it's some reductive group whose Lie algebra is either that of G or that of G dual, and that depends on some what kind of root of unity we pick. And so that will be that's not actually important for me right now, but I want to mention here because it will become important a little later. But other than that, somehow we kind of we're not in a good situation because for generic Q we really get nothing geometrically. So, just a
comment. So I remember correctly. If we deform the twist to quantum Langlands, there are no line operators anymore. So that's consistent with
killing the left side.
But on the other hand, like the right side is something. The right side is not a symmetric tensor category, so you'd never expect that to appear in the bulk of 4D, but it can appear on a boundary.
Okay, well, yeah, but now I'm thinking some very pedestrian approach. I'm not saying how it's related to any quantum field theory or anything. I'm just saying that let's try just take this geometric set like a statement. So right hand side has a deformation. Can we deform the left hand side? That is no. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that I want to say that this is the reason why I want to think about geometric Satakia right now as a bad statement. But now I want to replace it with some other statement, which will not have either of those drawbacks. And then this other statement will actually have a series of generalizations. That's what I want to do. Maybe a better statement, well, better from certain points of view. Statement is what Dennis Gaisgary calls fundamental FLE. So that stands for fundamental local equivalence. And so this is due to, this was originally proposed by Luria and then was proved by Gaisgary maybe for generic Q. Well, I'll formulate, and then there was a work by Gaisgary Lysenko for Q being root of unity. I'm going to formulate without Q, but then the statement will be that it survives also with Q. So the idea is that we should take on the left-hand side, we should now take the Whittaker category of the affine Grassmannian, which means that this is the category of n comma chi. Well, let me write it like this. N of k comma chi equivariant. Well, if you want to be careful, then you really need the word D-module here. This other work in the work with Sheaves on the overfine field, where this is N is in G is the sort of maximally important, and the chi, some generic character. If we take this category, so let me write it here, then. This category is now still equivalent to Reb G check. And this is, this is an equivalence of actually, if you want to be careful, the left-hand side has an actual factorization structure. This is an equivalent factorization categories, which in this case, this factorization structure comes just from tensor category structure. And this is true on derived level, more or less logically. So this, because this N is a unipotent group, it immediately implies that this is true on the derived level, and also this is true with Q. So this. Well, I have to be a little bit careful here at Roots of Unity, because Roots of Unity have to be sort of careful about what version of the quantum group you consider, and I won't go into this. So so I'll just say that let's say that throughout this talk, you will always be either one or generic.
Sorry, okay. What does true on derived level mean? What's on the right hand side when you say derived?
The same thing. Just derived. I mean, just the point is that if you look at the left hand side, this category, this is in terms of the abelian categories. But the left hand side, so if you can see the corresponding derived category, it is the derived category of the abelian. So therefore, there's no question in some sense what.
Okay. Thanks.
So. And so I will have more examples of such situations where, but in those situations, it will be much less obvious that the corresponding, well, on the geometric side, the derived category, some kind of equivalent derived category will be derived category of the abelian category. It will be true, but it will be, I mean, here it's tautological because we're taking equivalence with respect to an important group. Later on, we're going to consider examples when we'll be taking equivalence with respect to some group which is not an important, but the statement will still be true. Okay, any questions before I actually move to the examples I want to discuss? All right, so now I want to generalize this, and these generalizations will indeed have to do with some of the examples of the things that David Ben-Zvi talked about, but so I want to discuss generalizations. Some serious, let's say, generalizations. And again, maybe since this is, let me pretend that I know something about physics, let me say that this will be, so in this way we'll construct examples of dual boundary conditions eventually in generic Kapustin Witten twisted 4D Young Mills. And I should say that most of the examples I talked about, I learned on examples from Davide, so this is mostly due to Gallardo, but somehow what we can do is to format some mathematical statements here and in some cases prove them. So, but let me discuss somehow. So here least super groups or super algebras will appear. So there will be some equivalence eventually, and it will be an equivalence between the left hand side and the right hand side. So let me first discuss what will happen in the right hand side. So first of all, our examples will depend on the choice. Now we'll need some G, which is some, well, finite dimensional supergroup with some restrictions, actually with very heavy restrictions. So first of all, its even part should be reductive. And it will be more or less simple. So something like GLMN will appear, which is not simple, but otherwise, except for GLMN, all of them will be simple. So this, won't write a precise thing. So it will be either simple or some close or some very small modification of a simple the algebra. And then there's the following condition, which actually for Lie super algebras and for simple ones is a very restrictive condition, unlike in the even case. So let's look at the Lie algebra of G. Then I want this Lie algebra can be written as G0 plus G1 which is even an odd part. And I want to assume that G has an invariant non-degenerate symmetric bilinear form. So again, there are actually very few such things, but actually before I tell you how they all look like, well, I mean, I'll tell you what examples we'll be working with, but essentially this is more or less an exhaustive list, I think. But just remarks that in this case, first of all, G1 becomes a symplectic representation of G0. So it's really, well, that's already one relation to David's talk, that somehow you have a reductive group G0 and have a symplectic representation of it. And also in this case, we can talk about, representations with corresponding quantum group, again, because talking about quantum group requires a choice of a form, of an invariant form in the Lie algebra. So now one notation I need to introduce is the following. So given this G, I'm going to introduce the group G underlined, and this is just it will have some Lie algebra, which will also denote by G underlined. So let me explain what the Lie algebra underlined is, and then you can guess what the group is. So it's just this G underlines the Lie superalgebra, which is kind of the following. So it's it still looks like G0 plus G1 with the same G0 and G1, but the supercommutator on G1 is this kind of underlined supercommutator is required to be zero. And then all the rest of the supercommutators are the same as before. So in other words, you know, G0 is the same Lie subalgebra as before, then the action of G0 on G1 is the same as before. But when I commute to elements of G1, then want to get zero. So this is a kind of degenerate version of this Lie super algebra, and then I can do the same for the Lie supergroup. So so for some reason that will be also important for us. So now so I'm going to present so kind of goal is to present a series of generalizations of the FLE statement. And let me say what will be the right-hand side. So there will be, in the right-hand side, we'll have there will be kind of different story when Q is equal to one or when Q is generic. So when Q is generic, we'll have this rep U G. And when Q is one, we'll need to write rep G underlined. So somehow we have this, for generic Q, we have this kind of honest quantum supergroup, but somehow it should be that version of the supergroup, which when Q goes to one, degenerates not to the usual supergroup, but actually to degenerate supergroup. And I have to confess, I don't know what to do. What is the correct thing to do at roots of unity? So in other words, so we'll have this series of statements like the FLE theorem, but somehow, well, what we'll have on the right hand side will be this. So note that, by the way, that representations, so just a remark is that what is a representation of G underlined? This is a very kind of easy thing. So this is just this representation the same as G zero equivariant modules over the exterior algebra of G1. So we just take this exterior algebra and then take modules over it. And then you see the modules which I equipped with an additional action of G0, which is compatible with the action of G0 and G1. So, and again, so for generic U, we don't need any, we don't need to put anything degenerate, but for critical to one would do. Okay, so this is going to be the right-hand side. Any questions?
Can I imagine that kind of G is also, like there's a family of Gs that has central fiber G underline or something like that?
Well, I mean, like commutative, well, actual G's, not quantum G's. Yeah.
I mean, well, I just want some way to make this statement more like rep Q, like it's like rep Q, GQ or no, something.
I think you should be able to write just some version of quantum universal enveloping algebra, literally, such that when you specialize the cubicle to one, you will get universal enveloping algebra as G underlined rather than G. I mean,
okay.
I think that's definitely possible to do.
Okay, cool.
I mean, you know, even in the usual case, when you write quantum groups, it's a delicate story. I mean, kind of the standard way how you write how you explain what you mean by quantum group at for generic U, but then somehow there are various versions. If you want to sort of work with over polynomials in U, then somehow there are actually a lot of choices you can make.
Right.
And for instance, okay. Because of that, at roots of unity have actually a lot of different notions of quantum groups. And so something like that is happening here. And again, I'm not sure what is the right thing to do at root of unity at all. Now, what about the left hand side? So, by the way. So roughly speaking, we'll have some kind of category of sheaves on the affine Grassmannian of G0. But in fact, this will almost be true, but somehow not quite. In some simple examples, that will be the case, but then I'll try to explain some kind of subtlety, which actually I don't really understand very well. Myself. But let me actually, before I go into this, let me discuss what kind of examples of the supergroups actually appear. So, what are the supergroups in question? Well, the main example, which kind of the easiest one, is GLMN. So that's the one which is not simple, but kind of relatively close to simple. Then there are various orthosymplectic examples. And so here, let me separate sort of two cases. I'll separate the even and the odd case, because later on, they will behave slightly differently. And then there are two more exceptional examples. There are two Lie superalgebras, or Lie supergroups. One is called F4, and the other is called G3. So here, I can tell you what G0 is. So here, G0 is, I think, spin 7 times SL2. And in this case, I think it is G2 times SL2. So this is G0 in this case. So, essentially that exhausts all the list of supergroups of more or less simple Lie supergroups with the reductive even part and with a non-degenerate invariant form. Other than purely even, of course. So as I said, that in addition to the even ones, there are not that many, but somehow, so So now let me explain. So let's now talk about this left-hand side. The idea is that, rough idea, is that we should really consider this, let me connect it to David's talk. So you can see the action of G0 on G1. Remember, this one is a symplectic representation. And so let's call this. Oh, the only thing is that, there's one thing I forgot to, which I said incorrectly. Let me go slightly back. So I said that the left-hand side, it should be a fine grass minor G north check. There should be some space. Well, we'll consider this kind of Hamiltonian space with a G naught action. Then, in principle, in good world, but somehow, again, we'll discuss that the world is not as good as I'm going to say right now. We should have some dual M check with an action of G naught check. And so if M happens to be, M check happens to be cotangent bundle to some, let's call it X check. So X check still acted on by G naught check. Then, everything is a finer smooth, for example, then as in David's talk, then we would want to take the category of, let's say perverse sheaves or, if you want abelian situation, GO4 equivariant on X of K. And now we want to claim that, for instance, this one is really rep G underlined. And then there should be also Q version. Well, and there's some variants of this. So for instance, if this X check, there's a V here. Then there's a, variant is, again, as in David's talk, is if M check is some kind of twisted contention bundle. I.e., let's say there's some Y check and there's some, and then there's some group here, some group, let's say H acting on this Y, and then X check is the Hamiltonian reduction of T star Y check by H with some character. Then we can consider a similar story, but then we should consider, then the corresponding thing to consider will be perverse sheaves on, which are on Y check of K, H check of K, should consider perverse sheaves on H of K, maybe times G check of O equivariant sheaves on, I'm still writing this incorrectly, H of K, comma chi covariance sheaves. And then in fact, there should be some semi-direct product here on the Y check of K, something like this. Again, I'm going to explain examples how this works. So that's kind of, this is what the story will look like. It is for GLMN. For or the symplectic case, there will be some kind of, at least in the odd or the symplectic case, there will be some modification to this. But let me first discuss the GLMN case. So it's known how to describe this dual let's consider GLMN case. And I want to assume that M is less or equal than N. And then, so what is our G1 in this case? G1 in this case is the cotangent space to n by m matrices, which is acted on by the group GLN times GLM, which is our G0. So let's describe, so this is our symplectic representation. And so let's, this is our M, if you wish. So what is our M check in this case? Well, how to describe it? Well, let me actually explain how there's actually some definition of this thing. There's some mathematical definition of what M check is, which I probably won't have time to explain. But I think the thesis also have some ways to compute those. So for instance, the answer I'm going to describe for you now, I learned it from, as I said, I learned from Davide. So M check. First, there are kind of several cases. There's a case when n is equal to m, or n is or m is strictly smaller than that. So if m is equal to n, then M check is the following thing: it's the cotangent bundle to GLN times CN, and so here this is acted on by GLN times GLM in the following way. So one GLN acts, just on the left on itself, and the other GLN acts on GLN on the right and on CN. So it's a So in this way you get two commuting actions of GLN on the space, and then we can see the cotangent bundle. And if M is less than N, well, let me consider that first of all, there's a special case which is especially nice when M is equal to N minus one, then this M check is going to be a cotangent bundle to just GLN, which is acted on by the corresponding group GLN times GLN minus one in this case. And the way it acts is that again, our GLN acts on the by left
Sasha, your audio cut out for a little moment there.
Is it better?
Sorry,
now?
You in the middle of the description of that action on the
GLN. You know what? Let me try to move maybe to a different room where my connection might be better. Is this better now, Ben?
I mean, it's about the same. It was just there was sort of a dead spot there where you were describing what the action was.
But I mean, right now, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so this is the case. When m is equal to n minus one, and in general, if m is equal to n, then there are several descriptions of this, and one description is that this m check is going to be equal to the following thing. It's going to be you can write as GLN times, times some space, and this SMN is the slot of a slice to some nilpotent element in GLN, which is EMN, which is just, it's actually a nilpotent element, which just consists of one Jordan block. And of size n minus m. So you see that if m is equal to n minus one, then this is just the zero nilpotent, and the slot of a slice, I mean, like I said, the slot of a slice in the entire Lie algebra, then the slot of a slice is just Lie algebra itself, and then we get GLN times its Lie algebra, which is the same as a cotangent bundle to GLN. And otherwise, I just consider this thing, and this is always symplectic. And it's kind of exercise to see that it has a natural GLM times GLM action. So this is the dual thing. And accordingly, you, the point is that so this thing is symplectic, and moreover, it can always be written as some kind of Hamiltonian reduction of the quotient bundle to GLM. So acquiring it, I can tell you now what in this case what the left hand side is going to be, and the left hand side. So again, if m is equal to n, then we should consider the following thing. Then we should consider perverse sheaves on. Well, I'll write it in there are two ways how you can write it. You should consider the fine Grassmannian of GLM times k to the n. And here I should consider the sheaves equivariant with respect to GLN of O. Now, in principle, you can rewrite it as perverse, but it's kind of hard to define as perverse sheaves equivariant with respect to GLN of k on the fine Grassmannian of our full group G naught, which is GLN times GLN times k to the n. So that's kind of maybe a slightly better way to think about it, but kind of technically it's better to work with the first description. And the claim is that this category is equivalent to a representation of GLN n underlined. And then same thing with Q. With Q, so if you can, I won't write it, but the idea is that if you can see this Q twisted sheaves, and so this twisted sheave is by the determinant bundle just in the fine Grassmannian of GLM, then I get the representation of the quantum GLNN. Well, and similarly, maybe let me write it for m equal to n minus one, that's maybe better, kind of easiest thing to describe. Then I should consider the perverse sheaves in the affine group, just perverse sheaves in the affine Grassmannian of GLM equivariant with respect to GLN minus one of all. And that thing is equivalent to rep GLN minus one n underlined. And then, let me write here the Q version so you can see that this. And so here now I don't need any degeneration. And then for general M less than N, what we should consider is that, I said that this GLN times the Slotovy slice is the Hamiltonian reduction. So this, if I write this GLN times this Slotovy slice, this can be written as T star GLN Hamiltonian reduction with respect to some unipotent group called UMM with some character. And then what we should consider then, we should consider in the left-hand side, perverse sheaves on the fine Grassmannian, equivalent with respect to GLM of O, semi-direct product with this UMN K of chi, Grassmannian GLM. And that thing is equivalent to, well, let me put it with Q now. So if I put rep Q, GLN, yeah. Okay, so first of all, what is the status for all the statements? This is almost proven in all the situations. Well, I should say that for, for Q equal to one, this was proven in the paper of myself, Finkelberg. Ginsburg and Trafkin. So, and Q generic for M equal to N or M equal to N minus one. And then subsequently still for Q equal to one, there was a paper by Trafkin and Young, any M less than N. And so Q generic, this is, I think, proven now only for M equal to N minus one, but I think that it's a kind of technical issue. I mean, just we're just lazy to do the general case, but for in this paper of myself with Finkelberg and Trafkin. So, yeah, so, and well, yeah, one important thing I want to emphasize is that if M is equal to zero, then this UMN becomes this maximally important. And we just get the FLE for GLM. All right. So any questions about this? Yes, and another thing I promised is that I claim that in this situation, the derived category is the derived category of the abelian. So the statement holds also on the derived level. This is especially funny if you look at this m equal to n minus one case. So we see that if here, if I got Q here, even for Q equal to one, if you instead here consider JLN of O equivariant shapes, then the corresponding derived category is not a derived category of the abelian. But if you write JLN minus one here of O, then you get some equivariant derived category, which is the derived category of the abelian category for some reason. So that's kind of, again, I don't have any good explanation for that. So any questions?
What happens when M equals N and you and with a Q?
Same thing, you just only consider this Q twisting only in the Grassmannian.
And is that understood at roots of unity?
No, nothing is understood at roots of unity. Absolutely nothing. So I don't even know what the right statement is somehow. Now, I should say that on the level of formulations, we have similar statements. In all other cases, but they're proven only for in the sort of in a classical case, proven for first of all for only for Q equal to one. So nobody tried to generic Q for Q equal to one in this in the SOSP case. Now I should say that something funny is happening there. So first of all, as David taught us in his talk, this S duality for sort of Hamiltonian G spaces works nicely if this Hamiltonian G space is hyperspherical. So this is the following lemma, and which is kind of for the exceptional ones, it's also true. But we had to use the help of Sasha Lashvili to prove this, that this in the above cases, V1 is always a hyperspherical. Symplectic representation of G0. Again, I don't have any kind of uniform proof. That's only case by case proof of this. That's kind of one thing. Now, I probably won't give you the answer in the other cases, just in the orthogonal symplectic case, they're pretty similar, except that there's one catch I want to discuss, which is kind of important for many situations. So again, David taught us about this kind of S duality for Hamiltonian G spaces, but in fact, it doesn't really work that way in general. So this is the following thing you need to take into account, something that some kind of anomaly that was, I think, originally discovered by Witten. So let's even assume that we have this G, some reductive group, and M, well, let's even say that's just a symplectic representation of G. Now, you want to define out of that, you want to define the boundary condition and the corresponding Young-Mills, the four-dimensional Young-Mills. And the question, so the question is, can you do that? And the answer is that you actually, sometimes you can, but sometimes you cannot. And there is some anomaly happening here. So when does it, define a boundary condition it defines a boundary condition if the following thing is true. So given any representation M of G, it defines some form which I'll call this kind of thing, that's index M. This is a invariant form on the algebra of G, which is always integral, and the form it's integral even, and the form is just the following. You just consider, well, let's consider if you consider two elements x and y in G, then you can consider trace in M of X times Y. This is X, Y, comma M. Now, the problem is that the question is, what happens when you divide this form by two? So if you can see the Y, one half of this form, if this thing is still integral and even, then M defines a boundary condition. But if not, then it doesn't define a boundary condition on usual Young-Mills, then it does not. However, apparently, and here, so again, I'm not familiar well enough with the corresponding physics terminology, I think it should define a boundary condition in some kind of twisted version of Young-Mills. Probably, but again, this is not a question to me in some sense, probably it defines a boundary condition in some twisted version of 4D Young-Mills. And this twisted version should have the following property, that it should also have some version of S duality for it. And its S duality should relate it to 4D Young-Mills, not for the group G check as usual, but for some other group. So remember that, so in the beginning of my talk, I said that if you consider this category of perverse sheaves, geophoric variant on the affine Grassmannian of G with some twisting, and the twisting is actually determined by a form on the Lie algebra. So here we should actually consider twisting determined by the one half of this form. then this is going to be equivalent to representations of some reductive group H. Which, you know, in my situation is going to be, it's going to be a G check, but otherwise it's a, but otherwise it might be some other group. And so I think that here, this M should define the boundary condition for some twist in Young-Mills, for which S duality should work in such a way that it should relate it to Young-Mills for the group A, for this group H. And so a typical example of this is that if we consider symplectic group, for example, Fangrassmannian for the symplectic group with a twisting, let me put one half means that I take one half of the form defined by the fundamental representation of the symplectic group, then this is equivalent to representations of the symplectic group again. So from this point of view, the symplectic group becomes self-dual. So it's not representation of S O to N plus one, as you might as you might anticipate, but it's actually going to be a representation of the symplectic group. And so such issues do appear in what in the formulations of this equivalences for other group, for groups other than GLMM. So for example, typical example is that if you consider this orthogonal symplectic thing with odd orthogonal part. So here the corresponding G1 is going to be just the, well, it's always the bifundamental, so it's going to be isomorphic to this, but here this anomaly is present. So anomaly is present means that exactly that's half of that form is not in, is not integral in here. So anomaly is present. And so in particular, well, let me assume here that for simplicity of k is less than m, then here the dual group for the for these purposes will be will actually be well, it anomaly is present, but it's only present in the symplectic direction, not in the orthogonal direction. So the so the dual group here will be sp to k times sp to m, and not sp to k times so to n plus one, as you might think. And so so in this case, it turns out that the geometric realization of the corresponding category of representations of this quantum supergroup will be via the affine Grassmannian of sp to n. So something related to the affine Grassmannian of sp to n. So in fact, this m check here will be again sp to n times some Slodovy slice, some particular Slodovy slice. And so such issues arise for exceptional, in the exceptional case as well. And maybe a last thing I want to say about this is that even if this anomaly is not present, you can actually put it by hand. So somehow the situation is that if this form is divisible by two, then it defines this boundary condition in the usual theory, but it also apparently defines the boundary condition in all kind of twisted theories. So you can actually, so if it is divisible by two, then you're kind of, you have the freedom of putting any twisting you want. And so to formulate a nice statement, in one of these exceptional cases, for example, even when this anomaly a priori is not present, we kind of have to, we still have to put this twisting, and only then we have this kind of well-defined left-hand side, which, I mean, we have this equivalence of categories that rep Q of some supergroup is equivalent to some kind of category of shapes. Okay, let me just stop here probably. I was going to maybe relate it more to David's talk, and maybe we should leave it for questions.
Well, you can always leave that to an exercise to the audience. All right. Well, let's thank Sasha for his very nice talk. Are there any questions? Or does anyone want to solve the exercise?
Which exercise?
To relate your talk and David's talk.
Well, I mean, I think that when you put, well, just say that in principle, when you put Q equal to one, this is really should be a special case of what David was talking about. But kind of one really good exercise about David's talk is what to do when Q is not one. And it should actually have some kind of number theoretic meaning. But to understand this number theoretic meaning, you should really, what has a chance of having a meaning in number theory is the case when Q is a root of unity. And when Q is a root of unity, I don't really, as I said, I don't really know what's going on, what is the right formulation. So we see that for Q equal to one, we have to consider this degenerate version and so on. And so this degenerate version really had to do with this L functions appearing in David's talk and so on. But I think that this whole realm examples that I think David and maybe Yanis Sikularidis consider with this kind of spherical and hyperspherical varieties, and only very few of them can be lifted to the quantum level, to generic Q. And I don't know either what is the meaning of that from number theory point of view, or also what is the meaning of that from physics point of view. I think David, I don't know if he's here still or not, at some point mentioned to me that they have some kind of statement with Witten that such kind of boundary conditions have to arise from Lie superalgebras, but frankly, I could never understand what the precise statement there is. So I don't know if David is here.
Well, unfortunately, David seems to no longer be on. Oh, he's here in person.
Okay, great. So I think you did mention to me at some point that somehow that if you want to have some kind of boundary. Well, if you start with the grouper and the symplectic representation, if you want to out of that construct a boundary condition in kind of Young Mills for this generic Kapustin-Witten twist, then it must come from Lie superalgebra. But I mean, I don't know what is the status of the statement.
Right. A way to think about it is that you can define the boundary condition in the A of B twist. And then you can try to move to the generic twist.
Yes.
And in the twisted theory, this is done by sort of adding a nilpotent supercharge to the original BRST charge. And this deformation might or not be compatible with boundary condition you had. So it's like, you know, you're trying to turn on a Morricartan element in the bulk, and then the restriction of Morricartan element to the boundary would obstruct potentially the deformation of the boundary. This obstruction contains some quadratic expression in the moment maps of the action of G0, or at least that's what we seem to find with Edward. And so if you have Soulier superalgebra, this vanishes, and otherwise it doesn't.
But also this Lie superalgebra must have this invariant form on it, right? Because otherwise I can't imagine how we can define a boundary condition. Do we see somehow from this point of view how this, because for instance, you want to talk about this.
I mean, suppose the analog of G underline can be defined for G1s, which are more general than.
Right. No, G1 is, no, that's sure. No, of course, for this, you just need you can define just for any representation. Of
yes,
zero. But that's right. But now
and to deform G underline to G, you need to be able to sort of find the pairing from G1 times G1 to G0, right?
I'm saying something else. I'm saying that I think that in the story I was trying to talk about, you know, for example, on the right hand side, you have eventually you're going to have a representation of the quantum supergroup. And to define what quantum supergroup is, you need the corresponding Lie superalgebra to have an invariant form on it. And not all, for example, simple Lie superalgebras have a non-degenerate invariant form. So mm-hmm. The question is, for example, in your calculation, do you also see the reason why you need this form? Or
I'm not sure. I
And if you don't see it, then the question is, what will be the corresponding category on the right-hand side?
You mean the fact that there is a synthetic representation?
Yeah. So you see that, for instance, go back, then so we have this left-hand side and right-hand side, and the right-hand side was this rep Q, say GLMM, and in general, we'll rep Q of something else. So in order to say what, you want to attach this meaning to rep Q, the only way I know how to do it, I need an inverse. So for instance, if you think about it, not in terms of quantum groups, but in terms of Kac-Moody groups, then it's you need to put this Kac-Moody category for the corresponding Kac-Moody group. But to say what the Kac-Moody group is, you need the central extension. And to say what the central extension, you can say the loop algebra of your Lie super algebra, and then you need the central extended. To central extended, you need the form on that. Right.
But isn't that just a parameter psi of Kapustin-Witten?
It is. Well, I mean, kind of psi of Kapustin-Witten is the restriction of it to the even part. But the point is
But is there really content in the odd part?
Yes. For example, it tells you that the corresponding the odd part is a symplectic representation of the.
No, sorry, the fact that it's a symplectic representation, you need it.
No, it's more than that. It is precisely that, but it says that it should be Lie super algebra such that the odd part should be symplectic representation of the even part. That's not always.
So if you think about the general twist is the deformation of the A twist or B twist, then in the A or B twists, you have the synthetic representation G1 together with the action of, you know, with a symplectic form. In order to deform into general twists, you need to also have a certain quadratic identity on the moment maps for that representation. And the quadratic identity seems to be.
Yeah, but I think there should go something about the compatibility of the symplectic form with the super commutator. Right? So just.
Right. That's a good point. So, right. So we write down the quadratic identity. That did imply the Jacobi identity. Maybe it also implies what you're describing. I'm not sure.
So from what I understand, the bilinear form that Sasha's talking about, or perhaps it's dual, is the thing that it defines this quadratic identity you're talking about. You take the moment map, pair it with the self of this form, and the identity says that the moment map is isotropic with respect to it.
Yes.
So it seems like that form is sort of, I mean, sometimes there's a canonical choice, but it seems pseudo-arbitrary.
Well, I mean, if your Lie super algebra is simple, then it's unique up to scalar.
Yeah, that's sort of what I meant.
Right, but then eventually it's just a question of how it's, I mean, you can normalize it by sort of requiring something about its restriction to the given part. I mean,
I think it would be very nice to just redo the calculation in a twisted formalism. It was rather painful.
And also, I would like to understand it sort of, you know, from a physics point of view, what is the right way to talk? I mean, I think I asked you, but I still don't have clarity here. So what is the right way to think to talk about this one half twist?
We have a discussion planned in at 2 local time. And a very short lunch period.
Let's come back
to. If you're okay with that, sorry, it would have been more natural to discuss a bit now.
No, sure, absolutely. I mean, I don't know. Are there any other questions to about the talk itself?
I had a question, but I can probably wait to the discussion.